This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. It seems every time I read a music book or see a music documentary, the photographs come from the Michael Oakes Archive. It's the largest archive of its kind in America, with about 100,000 records and close to 2 million photographs. Oakes has a new book featuring 1,000 of the best record covers of all time from his archives. Before he turned his archive into a full-time obsession and business, he was a publicist in the record industry, and he managed the career of his brother, the late folk rock star Phil Oakes. We asked Michael Oakes to join us and bring some of his favorite early rock and roll obscurities. The first record he brought was pivotal to his record collecting career. The story behind it dates back to when he was a kid getting an allowance of 50 cents a week. That was hardly enough to buy records, so he'd use the money for bus fare to the record store, and when he got to the store, he'd steal records.
This one day I get there, and this record I have to have is a thing called Letter to an Angel by the Five Shillings, which is a very black record, and it's the kind of thing that in Columbus, Ohio, if you didn't get it the first week, it would disappear, because that was not a good black market. And so I get to the store, and it was a rainy day, and there was nobody else in the record store, just me. And I was going, this is really dumb. I mean, I should turn around. This is too dangerous. I mean, you know, there's nothing else for the salespeople to do but watch me. But I couldn't leave without the record, so I did try and steal it. Then they caught me at the door, and they threatened to put me in jail and all that, and actually just called my parents and told them. So anyway, I never got the record. And it took me years later to find that record. And in fact, in actuality, that record was the impetus for building the whole archives, because what happened when I came out here to Los Angeles in 1969 and took my first job as a West Coast manager of publicity for Columbia Records, I was telling somebody this story, and they told me that that record is impossible to get. Now, even if you could find it, it was a $40 record, and this was 69. And I figured, I've got to have that record. So I became obsessed by it. And I finally found somebody who had it, who was willing to trade that for a rare Bob Dylan record I had. And so I finally did get it. But at the same time, as I was doing that, I realized I wanted every record I had when I was a kid. And so that became my obsession. I just spent every waking hour trading with people, going to garage sales, you name it. And eventually built up the collection to 100,000 records.
Yeah, mission accomplished.
Yeah. So, no. Mission never accomplished.
More precisely, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so one more thing before we hear the Five Shillings.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me why you love this record so much.
It's just basic. It's like, it's funny, I never got to total basics. I never liked the real rural blues. I didn't like stuff that basic, but I like stuff that was more urban. So it's like it's a doo-wop group doing a very sad ballad, and it's like sort of it predates rap. I mean, we're talking probably 19. Oh gosh, that would have been 56, I think, or 57. So it was a spoken black word where the guy talks the bad problems he's having with his love affair. And it's just, I guess as a kid, a lot of us going through teen angst identified with the blacks as, this is their pain talks to my pain. And, you know, somehow growing up with that, I've never outgrown it. I mean, I've always had this black music still is more important to me than almost any other form. I think it's the more immediate and the more soulful. I think that's why they call it soul music.
Hey, well, this is Letter to an Angel by the Five Shillings from the record collection of Michael Oakes.
Do, 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 da, la, la. As I sit here alone in blue, I can think of no one, no one but you. Honey, I remember all the wonderful times we had together, the beauty of your love, the great and priceless years gone by. This in mind, I sit here and cry. Why, as I sit in this darkest room, can I not visualize you before me? That alone is pain. And with a fever, it drives me mad. Is there an end to all this? Will I once more have your lips to kiss? Just to see you. You again was all I asked.
Michael Oakes, one of the amazing things about pop culture is how you can have this incredible set of memories attached to a record, and that could be a record that nobody else knows.
That's what's scary when you said mission accomplished about the record collection. The thing I love about, I guess, most forms of collecting, but specifically this form, is this collection will never be complete. I mean, just think of every town in this country that had local records like this that you had to be in that town to hear. I mean, it goes on and on. The entire world music available to everybody now. So I go into a record store and somebody says, well, here's the new John Lee Hooker from Nairobi, you know. So if they have that one, they must have five others that good. And so it's just it's voluminous and virtually never ending.
My guest is Michael Oakes, and he runs the Michael Oakes Archives, an archive of rock and roll and pop and rhythm and blues records and photographs. And his new book is called 1,000 Record Covers, and it's album jackets from the 1950s onwards. What story do you think record covers tell?
Basically, they were just a visual. It was just a graphic to sort of enhance what was on the disc, or to give you some idea of what was on the disc, or in actuality, oftentimes, to hide what was on the disc. I mean, the thing I love about the book is putting together all the early 50s covers of black artists that had to have white people on the cover, because the rack jobbers, the people who distributed the records in the South, would not carry a record with a black person on the cover, which is shocking. But that actually went all the way through to Motown. The first Motown record covers actually had cartoon drawings that were non-racial, so you couldn't tell actually who was on the record. So there's that degree, or some of the early covers are just mind-blowing as far, I mean, they're actually works of art. I remember, and it's not just me, I know a lot of other people did this too, that like when I went to college, I decorated the entire wall with album covers. I mean, they were just incredible visuals, especially like early blues albums like the Reverend Lewis Overstreet or whatever. They were just like glimpses of pop culture Americana.
Just to clarify what you're saying, I mean, a lot of rhythm and blues and jazz performers who were black were on their own album jackets. Was it just like rock and roll type acts who were trying to cross over that had white people substituting for them?
No, it was mixed, because even like an Earl Bostick, there were always and he was jazz. There were always just drawings on the covers. It would depend. Like I guess in jazz, it was more prevalent to show the fact that it was a black artist, that it wasn't so horrific. I think rock and roll being the language of the teenagers, and I think that's what they were afraid of.
My guest is Michael Oakes, who runs the Michael Oakes Archive in Los Angeles, housing about 100,000 records and close to 2 million music photos. His new book is called 1,000 Record Covers. We'll talk more and hear more music after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Michael Oakes, he runs an archive of records and music photos. We asked him to bring some of his favorite early rock and roll obscurities. When I was young, I was always intrigued by the rumble records, and these were records in which there were two groups, and it was billed as a rumble, like the Cadillacs meet the Orioles or the Paragons right. meet the Jesters, and there'd be guys in leather jackets with chains on the cover.
Yeah,
you look at it now, and it all looks really kind of harmless and campy, but, you know, it's not how it looked to me when I was nine.
Yeah, well, that's what they try to do to make this. This is either the great black threat or this is the juvenile delinquency threat that if you like rock and roll, you'll end up smoking reefer or wearing Levi's and leather jackets, you know.
Well, I think that sense of danger must have appealed to you, too, because I know one of the records you've brought with you, one of the rarities that you've brought with you today is called Jailbait.
Well, yeah, to go back to the original story when I got caught stealing, after my father punished me, he felt bad about it. So he told me that when he was a kid, he couldn't afford records either. So he went to the jukebox companies and bought used records for a nickel each. And so I went to my local jukebox company in Cleveland and found a way to get a ton of records going through the house every week. Basically, I collected for charity, so I got to listen to them all before I gave them to charity. And so the advantage of that is you weren't limited by what the local radio station was playing. And so I would just see a title. So if you can imagine a 13-year-old picking up a record that said Jailbait, and I went, go, got to check this one out. And then to put it on and find out it was as good as it was. And this is like a really obscure record by a guy named Andre Williams from, it's on the Fortune label out of Detroit. And so it's like, it's a very, very obscure record. And obviously with the title and with the storyline that it has, I mean, it's pretty obvious that it never got any airplay.
Okay, let's give it a listen. This is Jailbait.
I'm running, yes, before it's too late, trying to get away from that jailbait. It's a rough temptation, but a common invitation and a good association, but a quick elimination that will take you out of circulation. Yes, I'm talking about that younger generation. So take my advice, fellas, for goodness sake. 15, 16, 17, that's jailbait. Now they swear that they're in love, that you and her are my stars above, and she's looking mighty good, just like a young girl should. We try to tell you no, and let that young girl go, but you know it all, you have yourself a ball, and now that it is too late, as you look from cell number 8, I tried to tell your mate. Seventeen and a half is still jailbait. So tomorrow's the date for the trial of jailbait. And this you watch and see. The young girl will go free, and you'll get 1 to 3. So out the door she walks, to another man she talks. Before you can count from 1 to 8, another man in for jailbait.
Please, Mr. Judge, if you just let me go this time, I ain't gonna mess with them young girls no more. I swear I ain't gonna bother no more, Mr. Judge. I ain't gonna bother none 15. I ain't gonna bother none 16. I ain't gonna bother none 17. I ain't gonna mess with none 18. I'ma leave that 20-year-old ones alone too. I'ma get me a girl about 42. If you just believe what I say, let me go, Mr. Judge. Please, Mr. Judge, I ain't gonna bother young girls no more. Give me a break, Mr. Judge.
Yeah, wow. Who are the horn players on that? That's some pretty outside stuff they're playing at the end there.
Yeah, I know. I have no idea, actually. It's very hard. Fortune Records is this little dinky record company that some friends of mine from Cream magazine actually tracked, because Cream came out of Detroit also, tracked down Fortune. They're actually still going in the 70s, and they got some great stories. My favorite story about this guy, Andrea Williams, that he had one hit before Jailbait. No, sorry, he had, I think Bacon Fat came after Jailbait, and it got quite a decent amount of sales. And so Andrea came in to find out if he made any money, and they said no, but they lied to him and said, no, it didn't sell anything, but we think you have talent, so save up enough money and come back when you have enough money to pay for another session.
Great. I mean, those were the days.
Those were the days.
And my guest is Michael Oakes, and he runs the Michael Oakes Archives, which is a huge archive of pop music and photographs. And these records and photographs are used for movies and documentaries and books. And you see the Michael Oakes archives attributed all over the place. And we asked him to bring some rarities with him, rare 45s. And Michael, the next record you're going to play for us, you insist, is the best female soul record ever made. What is it, and why do you make that claim for it?
Well, two reasons. One is, I think the best soul singers usually came from the church, and especially the best female soul singers. And Lorraine Ellison is no exception. She came from the church, and after she didn't make it in pop music, went back to the church. And there's a guy named Jerry Ragavoy, who was one of the unsung heroes of rock and roll, who was this brilliant producer-arranger who found her. And he was doing some work for Warner Brothers, and there was this big Frank Sinatra session booked with a full orchestral. There was a full orchestra booked for this Sinatra session, and Sinatra canceled at the last minute. So they had access to all this, and so they put Lorraine Ellison in with this full orchestra, and she just cuts loose on this song called "Stay With Me." And it's like she starts out intense, and then she gets more intense, and you go, well, she can't top that. And then she tops it again.
Why don't we hear it? This is "Stay With Me," Lorraine Ellison.
You said you'd never ever leave me. Remember, remember. Oh, that's really pretty great.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's the same pain that Vincent van Gogh could express on canvas. I mean, it's the same thing to me. It's or as my brother said, you know, do you have a picture of the pain? And you know, there it is in 3 minutes and some seconds.
Your brother, the late Phil Oakes.
Yeah.
I can't help but think that Janis Joplin must have heard that record because I think Cry Baby seems really patterned on it.
No, you know, it's funny. Actually, on this album, there's another song that that Joplin did cover, Try, which is on the same album that this one is on. And so Joplin definitely heard it and covered the other song. And on this song was covered, unfortunately, by Bette Midler in The Rose, which is where you get the Joplin tie-in. But unfortunately, Bette Midler is a little too Vegas-y vanilla for my taste.
My guest is Michael Oakes, who runs the Michael Oakes Archive, housing about 100,000 records and close to 2 million music photos. His new book is called 1,000 Record Covers. We'll talk more and hear more music after a break. This is Fresh Air. Back with Michael Oakes, he runs an archive of records and music photos. We asked him to bring some of his favorite early rock and roll obscurities. You once hoped that you'd be able to hear every rock and roll record ever made.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if you've even got a chance to hear every rock and roll record in your own collection.
No. No, unfortunately, because everything as one gets older is an either-or choice. When I was younger, I was driven enough to do whatever it took to stay up all night. And, I mean, every spur moment was either getting the records or listening to them. And as one gets older, one is more into travel and books and all the other stuff. So now it's a balance. In fact, for a few years, I lost interest totally. And now I'm actually getting back into it because there are enough people like Matthew Sweet or Freddie Johnston or, you know, there's enough stuff that's really hitting my hot buttons again that are going, okay, got to get back into a heavy listening binge.
Michael, let's get to another rarity that you've brought with you, and this is a gospel group called the Fairfield Four. Tell us about them and when this was recorded.
Okay, this was recorded in the late 40s, and this will give you a good idea where rock and roll really came from. I mean, it wasn't rhythm and blues. It was really gospel and blues that created rock and roll. And this is like, it's got one of the best bass singers I've ever heard. And the song's called Let's Go, so it's a great exit song. And it's incredibly rocking for just a straight good old gospel tune.
Let's hear it.
Well, come on and let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go to the land where milk and honey flow.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go to the better land I know. Where my friends and loved ones waiting me. You're in that land I long to see.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go. Let's go. Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Let's go.
Well, what a great bass line there.
Isn't that? That was before they could afford instruments.
Well, Michael Oakes, thank you so much for sharing some of your recordings with us and talking with us about your new book. It's been a pleasure.
Ah, my pleasure, Terry.
Michael Oakes runs the Michael Oakes Archive of Records and Photographs. His new book is called 1,000 Record Covers,